Forever Dog.
Welcome to another episode of Best Show Bests, the greatest hits of the best show, with me, your host, Tom Sharpling. If you like what you hear, make sure you join us every Tuesday night on Twitch at 6 p.m. Pacific for a brand new episode of the Best Show, featuring callers, celebrity guests, live music, and plenty of surprises. Enjoy!
Is this it? Oh my goodness. Nervous now. Hold on. WFMU, you're on the air?
This is Martin Short here.
Oh my goodness. Oh my God. My name's Tom. How are you, Mr.
Hey,
Short?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing okay. But this is an honor to have you call the program, first
of all.
Well,
thank you very much.
I wanted
to. It's an honor for you to exaggerate your emotions to me, so thank you.
This is not an exaggeration. I'm all sweaty. I'm starting to get sweaty.
Don't be sweaty.
I'm going to try not to get sweaty. Well, first of all, thank you for calling up.
Yes.
I should let everybody know you will be doing a show this Saturday in Red Bank, New Jersey, at the Count Basie Theater.
The very hip Count Basie Theater.
Yes. And the name of the show is...
If I'd saved, I wouldn't be here.
Yes. And that's this Saturday night. People can go to countbasietheater.org to find out more about that. So, you know, I can say this. I've had comedians come on the show. You know, you do it once, you're good. You do it twice, you're great. You have done it so many times for so many years. You are a legend, and we all are all in awe of you. I've gotten so many responses from the idea of you appearing on the show. People didn't believe that it was going to happen.
Wow, that's very nice. You know, your old buddy Andy Beckman.
Yes.
Contact me, and of course, you know, he's a genius.
Yes, he is.
And we did Saturday Night Live together back like in 84, 85 season.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was the funniest guy on the staff. He was the go-to guy. The guy, if you had an idea and you now were convinced that it was bad, he would tell you, "No, it's not bad." You know, he still had that rhythm of his back then, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, he phoned me and said, "I should do your show." So I, of course, said yes, sir, and responded.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you listening to Andy and doing it. I guess let me just first tell people about it. Can you tell people about your show, the show that they can see this Saturday night, to give them an idea of what's in store for them?
I would say it's a very loose show. It's kind of a lot of improv. It's, you know, it's there'll be a hip band. I'll be singing and dancing and doing all that stuff, and then take everyone through a fake journey of my life. And Jiminy Glick will show up, and Ed Grimley will show up, and, you know, Frank will show up, you know. And, you know, when I go into the audience, I bring people up. It's a party with Marty. That's what I call it.
Well, that's exciting. That's awesome. I can't wait. I'm going to be there. I know I'm
Well, and that's very cool.
That's it. Now, as far as you doing impressions, so you do characters, and you've done throughout your career impressions. Well, like for you, what do you prefer? Do you prefer inventing a character or trying to crack the code on somebody and do an impression of them?
You know, I never really thought of doing it, but you know, when I was doing SCTV, we would just come up with an idea, and then we'd take a tape home, and then you do an impression, but you do it, and then you do it as. And then the second that, like, you'd filmed it, you couldn't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone would say, "Oh, I have an idea that Gore Vidal and Norman Mailer got into a fight at a party."
Yeah. Huh.
So Eugene Levy and I turned that into a Tide commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Eugene's studying Norman Mailer tapes, and he's never done him, and I'm studying Gore Vidal, and I'm doing him, and you get the angle right. And what I used to do is take the script that we'd write, and then I'd take a transcription of an interview with Gore Vidal, and you realize when you look at someone's transcription that it's the pauses and the ahs and the repetition of the phrases, you know, become... So what you do is you lift those out and put it into your script, and suddenly you get the rhythm of the guy you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't necessarily like I was this, you know, impressionist.
Sure.
As far as characters, I was just, I wasn't mimic. Even as a kid, I could, you know, impersonate the teachers and or the guy in the street, you know. And suddenly these voices became, because everyone's a character. You know, you pick up your shirts and the lunatic who's saying, don't get that dirty, you know, is a real guy. And he's worn that shirt for a reason. And if you try to present that, let's say, to on Saturday Night Live or in a film, they might say, oh, that's too broad. But the reality is that guy's wearing that shirt, and that's the way he talks.
Yeah, he's actually out there.
He's actually out there. So you just have to be kind of sincere in what you're doing, and then you can go kind of as broad as you want.
Mm-hmm. Is there ever a person you could not crack like that? Is there a person where you could not do, like where you could not find the way in, either to interpret them as a character, you know, somebody who...
I think, you know, it's why people gravitate toward Chris Walken or Jack Nicholson or Marlon Brando, because they're distinctive voices. You know, Johnny Carson was someone no one ever could do.
Mm-hmm.
Or Dana Carvey actually figured a way to do it. It was kind of brilliant. But obviously, the way to get in, you know, you hear the voice, you place the voice and figure out what the tone is, but mainly the attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Chevy Chase was hilarious back in the 70s doing Gerald Ford, and he didn't do any makeup.
No.
He just captured something that was stupid that was funny, you know.
Sure. We have Martin Short on the show right now. You can see him this Saturday at the Count Basie Theater in Red Bank, New Jersey. The show's called If I'd Saved, I Wouldn't Be Here, and you can find out more about it, countbasietheater.org. Now, Mr. Short, can I call you Marty, please?
I wish you would.
Oh, jeepers. Oh, I'm going to faint. Mike. So, Marty.
Yes?
I don't know if you are aware
of this. How presumptuous. Yeah.
You've done so many things in your career, the SCTV, the Saturday Night Live, the Three Amigos, your talk show. But there's one thing in my life that you've done that and there's this growing movement behind it now. It's something that it's a movie called Clifford.
I love Clifford.
Which that
Why, thank you.
That is, I'm going to say, top five favorite movies of all time. I've seen it easily a dozen times.
Oh, wow, thank you.
And I actually went as far, I bought on eBay one of your outfits from Clifford.
Well, now we're getting into an illness.
Yes, it is.
Now I'm sweating.
It's a fun illness, though.
It's a good, very fun illness.
I can't wait till you come to Red Bank. I'll be wearing it.
Good.
I cannot.
Fantastic. With the red jacket?
It's the dinner scene outfit. And I have shoes and everything.
So you're a slight little thing.
No, I'm not. I'm 6'3" here.
But
I can't.
What, did you cut the back?
No, I've never worn it. I just...
Oh, I see.
It's in a box. I don't know what to do with it. I got so excited.
Wow.
I bought it, and then I just said, I don't know what to do with this now. But... Can you, you know, everybody knows about SCTV, but Clifford is wildly under-documented.
It is under-documented. It was a bizarre, bizarre film that Orion made, Orion Studios, and then in the middle of shooting it, they went bankrupt.
Yeah.
So then they went bankrupt, and we thought, well, that's a bad omen. And so it kind of opened and went away, but then... in video, and it became this kind of cult thing, and then college campuses got into it, and so people talk to me about that film more than a lot of things. It's amazing.
But I
love that movie. I think that's one of the truly odd films, that just the conceit that a 40-year-old man would play a 10-year-old. And I was very obsessive that he wasn't 13, he was 10.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that his obsession with Mary Steenburgen was in fact almost prepubescent.
Yes, and it was,
even though I was 40 when I made it,
it almost made it like religious. His
yes,
obsession
exactly.
with it.
Yes, in the stare.
Now, how did did that start as something for you, or did that start as something for a kid? Like, what was the process with Clifford?
No, the guy who conceived it and was Stephen Campman, and he was and is a friend of mine, and he his idea was to cast me in it, and I thought it was insane, and he convinced me, and then we did a screen test, and the screen test was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, you know, it is a weird journey when you talk about heightened films or bizarre films. I remember when we were doing, we were promoting Three Amigos, and Steve Martin and Chevy Chase and I went on Today's Show. And Brian Gumbel kind of, you know, in a kind of patronizing way said, well, what do you guys say if people just say this film is silly? And I remember Steve Martin said, well, it depends how you say the word silly.
Mm-hmm.
If you say it's silly, then I say thank you. If you say it's silly, then I guess it's a drag. So, and then what ultimately happened, that was 1986, and then through the years, a lot of films became quote-unquote silly, like Three Amigos, and the Singing Bush and all the heightened stuff. And in a way, Clifford did that, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, when, in Clifford, when you, how loose were you playing the character versus the script for it? Were you guys, were you and Charles Grodin in Clifford, that two-man, when you guys are at, when you're sitting down at that table and he's yelling at you, I mean, that's...
No, there's a lot of stuff in there that's in the moment when he screams. I mean, you know, he's a brilliant improviser, and he and loves to keep it very loose. So when when he's screaming music, look at me like a human boy, you know that, and that was all. You know, there were lots of things that were not planned, shall we say?
Yeah. Well, that you know, that movie, I'm speechless. Just even that, I'm finally getting answers to Clifford. How did you do the height adjustments on it? Were you like when you were doing like your dancing? Was there like a little trench that you were in, or like were you?
No, there weren't trenches because we didn't have that big a budget, you know. So you'd have to be in a house. There were times when I'd be walking along in a close up, and then we'd cut to, you know, the back shot of me walking away with Charles Grodin, and we'd slip in a little kid, you know, for that. But mainly we got extras that were 6'3". That was all the requirements. So so when I'm dancing with the girls, they're all 6'3".
Okay.
Basketball gals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do you know where the little dinosaur is now? Do you have him?
Stefan?
Yeah, Stefan.
I have Stefan.
In a trophy case?
I have Stefan. Well, not a trophy case, but he's certainly in a drawer somewhere, you know.
Okay.
Really?
Just a drawer?
Well, he's just in a drawer. He's not behind glass. You know, he's Stefan from Clifford. But, you know, shoved with an old Amigo hat or something. It's in a case.
Yes. Now, just a couple more things here. I don't know how much time you have.
I'm driving, so you're whatever you need.
Okay. I'm just here, and I'm here as long as you can stay. Until
wow,
you're, when you're
like
fed
a telethon. We're doing a telethon
yeah.
now.
When you're fed up, you say, I'm going to go now. You just say.
Well, that was long ago, so I passed that moment, and I keep moving forward.
Oh, well, thank you for being a trooper here.
Thank you so much.
You know, one thing I've noticed going through your body of work is that you don't operate from a sense of meanness with your stuff or a sense of being, like, overly profane. You know, you definitely have, like, there's such a good spirit to everything you've kind of put out there, all your characters.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think in my life I'm kind of happy, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of, you know, laughing in the inside too, so I'm there's no axe to grind. So to me, I guess probably something that runs through my stuff is celebrating bizarre and grotesque people, but I'm not angry at anything or howling at the moon, you know.
Sure, sure.
Even Jiminy Glick is kind of a. It was not, you know. I've been asked if that's my attempt to get back at the media. Well, I never had a problem with the media. They've always been very nice to me, actually. So, Jiminy Glick was just a moron with power. Mm-hmm. You know, you flip around. I mean, he was an offshoot of my TV show, but if I had just been creating that character in a vacuum, he probably would have been a politician. You know, the idea that people like George Bush became president is hysterical to me in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And the panic that he must have felt midday, you know. And so you flip around talk shows and or afternoon TV shows and you see these people are huge hits and you realize they must have a staff that's nervous when they're coming in the room and someone's getting their tuna sandwich, and these guys are complete goofs and they shouldn't have any position at all. And so that always makes me laugh.
Yeah, that's great. Now Jiminy Glick came out of the talk show, the Daily, the
right. I was doing a show at CBS and the Martin Short talk show, and we were at the Farmer's Market in Los Angeles, and I wanted to go into Farmer's Market and do incognito, so we could get pieces, second unit pieces. And what happened was, and I'd now been doing all this stuff, putting on putty noses long enough so that people would just, I'd be in 2 hours makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And people would come up and say, hey, can I have your autograph? And I'd say, well, this is a drag. And so, but I'd made this movie Pure Luck, where at one point I'm stung with a bee and my face is supposed to swell up. And when I was shooting that day in that movie, everyone said, boy, I can't see you in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, that's what we should do. We should make them look like that moment. And and then there was a guy on my street when I was growing up in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and whose voice went high and then very low. You know, he was, if you stayed off his lawn, he owned a movie theater, and if you stayed off his lawn for an entire year, he'd let you go to the movie theater for free. So I thought, well, that's a great voice, and I just kind of, you know, put it away for a few decades.
And then you found the voice to fit the character.
Right. No rush.
Oh, look, I don't, however it worked, it worked.
Yeah.
That's exactly,
well,
you did it the right way.
Yeah. But anyway, so, that was it. But I don't think I remember when I was starting Second City in Toronto, and Joe Flaherty was the director of the stage show I was doing, and he said, you know, you'll always get a laugh if you mime putting on your pants and hitting your foot and swearing. That will always get a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can do better than that. So that always stayed with me.
Mm-hmm. Now going, you mentioned Joe Flaherty. When you were in addition to the, was it the final season of SCTV on NBC?
No, the second to last season.
Okay.
I came in the middle of the, whatever you call that season before the last season.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a Cinemax season.
Yes. Now, how scary was that for you? Like, I mean, even though you knew these guys off, you know, you had worked with these guys in the theater and you had relationships with a lot of those guys. But
it was daunting. It was daunting because, you know, the show was already a massive, that weird thing of it being a hit and a critical hit, and it just won all these Emmys. But I think that I did have a long, long history with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea Martin is my sister-in-law.
Sure.
I went to university with Eugene Levy and Dave Thomas. Joe I'd known since, 10 years before that. Catherine O'Hara I met when she was 17.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, so what I kind of did was, I actually did it very smartly. I really thought, okay, if I'm going to do this show and jump into this, I'm going to ask and expect a lot of help here. So when we shoot the pieces, you know, I bring Joe and Eugene to the editing room. Okay, what do we do here? What do you think here? What do you think that? And it was a great process because, you know, it wasn't live, so the sensibility, the comedic sensibility, became the people creating the show, and so there was no, the thing about Saturday Night Live is you can have a great idea, but if the audience doesn't laugh at it, you feel like a failure, and the producers kind of say, well, I guess we got to cut that, you know, because they go into mm-hmm. to the dress around three scenes heavy,
mm-hmm.
and so you kind of go, so you tend to have things that are out there and big and with jokes, and but the subtlety that you could create on SCTV was having no audience was an advantage.
Sure, there's like a. It seems like the difference between movies and theater.
In a way, yes, I think that's true.
And
both were exhilarating. By the way, I was, was one of the few who was able to do both shows, and they were equally exhilarating and equally had an advantage built into their makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Let me just say, we have Martin Short on the show now, and if you are in the New Jersey area, which a lot of you are, he will be appearing at the Count Basie Theater this Saturday night, May 2nd, in Red Bank, New Jersey. The name of the show is If I'd Saved, I Wouldn't Be Here, and you can get tickets and more information on that going to countbasietheater.org. Now, just talking about SCTV, do you remember the first time you felt like that you scored, like in that environment? You were like, man, that's what I need to do.
I think I remember the first read through. Also, my brother Michael worked on the show, so the first thing we did when I joined the cast is he and I went to his house and we wrote two scenes, and both of them got on.
Mm-hmm.
One was Jerry Lewis live at the Champs-Élysées, and
sure.
One was this photographer, Ron Galella, satire of him. And even the cast members are saying, well, you know, boy, that's very, you know. But everyone was really, really in my camp. There was no kind of, who's this guy?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I had done Second City for 2 years with most of the cast on stage. So it was a likely, and also at that point, Dave and Rick were going. Dave Thomas, Rick Moranis were planning to leave. So they needed me to work out as much as I wanted it to work out for me.
Sure.
So I don't remember that moment of being like panicked, and then suddenly saying I can do it. I don't think. First of all, I never feel I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always think that I'm just faking it, and that each new thing will not work. So there's never that moment. But I never felt isolated and, you know, pretending. I remember when I did Three Amigos, I didn't know Steve Martin or Chevy Chase or John Landis or Lorne Michaels or Randy Newman, who had written the music and part of the script. And so that was a daunting thing to be thrown into, especially because you were supposed to be one of the Amigos.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I remember certainly for a couple of weeks there doing an impersonation of myself being relaxed. And then relaxed into it sooner than I'd expected.
Mm-hmm. And I guess like you said, but the thing is, you're coming to this thing. You could never say this. You're you. They're glad to have you there, too. You didn't win a lottery to get there. You bring
No, but it is. There's a weird advantage to being loose, you know. And confidence is amazing. It's like when you talk about doing talk shows or stuff like that. I remember, Ed McMahon saying to me that, you know, they had just finished the run of The Tonight Show. And he said Johnny Carson said to him, they were about to go on. And then Johnny turned and said, hey, Ed, do you remember, we're all legends tonight. Remember when they hated us that first 2 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when you just are in the job, that's what I say to my kids now, too, when they start a new job, you know, whatever you think it is right now, if you don't like it, it will be fine in a few months. It just, you know, you relax into it. And so there is an event, but unfortunately with a movie, you don't have time to relax into it, because if you wait a couple of months, it's already finished shooting. So, but anyway, it was, yeah, no, they were fun. They were funny guys. Steve is hilarious. He once phoned me up and said, when Divine, the performance artist, died, he phoned mm-hmm. me up and said, I feel badly for Divine, but the good news is more roles for us. So it was, and Chevy's really funny. It was fun doing that.
Now, just one more thing about SCTV. Is there anything, when you think about those days, is there one defining memory that you've got? That is kind of always the first thing that pops in your mind of that time.
I think that we worked so long. You know, there was no at the reunions, they weren't operating. Because I just remember Joe Flaherty and I would shoot, for some reason, I think of Joe particularly, we'd shoot till around 11 at night, and then we'd frantically try to find last call in a bar somewhere because we'd have to be back at 6 in the morning. And so you lived in that bubble of shooting and editing. And then I remember James Wolcott in New York Magazine at that time wrote this kind of amazing piece on the show, and he was very kind to me. And I remember on a subway going to work looking at him saying, hey, someone's watching the show. This is cool, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a defining moment. And then, of course, you know, we would get nominated for all these Emmys, and we'd get nominated for every writing Emmy category. You know, I mean, like every option, what am I trying to say? Every category in the thing we'd get nominated for. So you'd go to Hollywood, and suddenly people that you had actually impersonated were coming up and saying how much they liked the show. So all that stuff was weird, because shooting it in Toronto and shooting so many hours and shooting it with no interference from a network, really, and shooting your own sensibility, you really felt like you were in this little bubble doing your own little thing, a little, you know, carving your craft, your wood carving, you know, in a little hut in Montana, and suddenly people are writing about you.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you be willing, Mr. Martin Short, would you to take a couple phone calls?
Absolutely.
Okay, if anybody has any questions for, you call him Martin, by the way, callers. I call him Marty.
Yeah, well, that's the difference in our relationship.
Exactly, we have gotten to this part. The number is 201-209-9368. If you have a question for Martin Short, who will be appearing, I can say, this Saturday, May 2nd, in Red Bank, New Jersey, at the Count Basie Theater. The name of the show is If I'd Saved, I Wouldn't Be Here, and it's countbasietheater.org. You can find out more about that. Mike is screening calls right now. Somebody just sent a question online. They wanted to know, what does a Martin Short turn to today for laughs? Like, who do you admire that's the current up and comers?
Oh, I'm a very easy laugh. I laugh at a lot of people. I think Seth Rogen's hysterical. I think Kristen Wiig is a genius.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that I kind of look at the earnest commitment to character work as always I'm a little seduced by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or just kind of again, kind of a fresh looseness, I think is or funny situations. I don't know. I've never been a tough laugh.
Okay. Well, here we have a couple calls here. What's good here, Mike? Okay, they're all good. How about that?
Is that
FMU? You're on the air.
Hi, this is Lee from Wisconsin.
Can you hear this guy, Marty?
I sure can.
Hey, Mr. Short, I'm a big fan, okay? But I got to ask a question. Why were you so bad on your appearance on...
What? Why are you talking? Wait, yeah, that was a good one, Mike? That was a good one?
He had a point.
Boy, this is sick. I'm sick to my stomach now.
You get that.
FMU, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you better be... Can you hear this guy, Marty?
Oh, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, Martin.
How are you?
I'm good. My name's Drennan.
How are you? Good.
I am a big fan of Clifford as well. I think it's awesome that Tom spearheaded this Clifford thing. It's cool. Captain Ron, though. How great is that movie?
Well, you see, this is a...
Look, I don't know what that guy is. What's going on here, Mike? You're on probation. No more calls. Only internet questions where I can screen them politely. Somebody wants to know about the Queen haters.
I love the Queen haters.
That appeared on SCTV on Mel's Rock Pile.
That's right.
And now I don't know if you're the world's biggest punk fan, but there are all these people at this radio station. This is like a free-form station where there's talk shows and there's music shows. There's a lot of shows that play kind of like punk and crazy rock, and the Queen haters gets played on the air by people, and because it just What was your process for that? Like, did you just find a band to record that? Or, I mean,
no. We recorded it. It was, but I would just watch the Sex Pistols, and it was supposed to be a real cheesy kind of band, like the guy from Wisconsin would like, and John Candy went and committed to a bald pate. I remember that.
Yeah, that's what that dead-eyed stare.
Yeah, oh, with her, a little with the little glasses.
Yeah, with a little chain.
Mm-hmm.
That because your inflection in that song is just like you are so off the song but right on it also. It's just you could have had a career as a fronting an actual band.
Yeah, but you couldn't do two shows in a row because I remember you blow your pipes out in one song.
Yeah.
I hate the bloody Queen, you know all that stuff.
Now, Jiminy Glick, how many seasons of that did you do for Comedy Central?
We did three.
And there's a best of DVD. But there's a couple of people who've written now, and they say they want to know about, is there any plans for anything a little more substantial?
You let these characters go to the rest home for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can bring them back or not.
Yeah, Jiminy's
in the pasture somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, just in terms.
Although he'll be showing up he'll be showing up at the Count Basie Theater. Don't get me wrong.
But just in terms of, is there like a DVD, like a full season package? I think is what they were wondering.
Oh, I see. A full season package. I don't think there is. I think there's a best of season one kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's a best of season two and best of season three.
Now, Mike. You know how many strikes there are in baseball, right?
Hey, don't be frightened of a jerk. What is this, Moscow in the 50s? Let them on.
All right. Number three. Okay. I run a tight ship here, Marty.
All right.
FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is Spoonie in Brooklyn. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I know this guy's okay. You're on with Martin Short.
Hello, Mr. Yeah. Martin Short. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
Hi, I have a question for you. I'm a really big fan of your work, and I just want to say that the joy that you throw into all of your roles is very infectious, and it just always makes it fun to watch everything you do. But my question is you never tried to do that thing that a lot of your peers have done, where they went into super dramatic acting, or
play the assassin.
It, to me, sometimes it seems like they overcompensate by taking these, like, serial killer roles or very creepy roles, and that's something you've never done.
I don't know. If you're doing a character, that you are acting. So yeah. I've never felt really anything unrequited about, if I could only cry. I think it's actually harder to try to figure out how to keep a bizarre reality while at the same time being sincere and at the same time being funny. So, I don't know. I also think everyone makes a contract with you. You know, like, I can sing, but if I went out on Letterman and just sang a medley of songs that weren't nominated, I think that people would be waiting for a sandbag, and if it didn't fall, they'd wish it had.
Which... I want to clarify with my question is and say that Clifford, the character Clifford, isn't terrifying in himself.
See, yes. You don't need to go more terrifying than Clifford.
Yeah, like whenever I watch that movie, I am filled with this urge to like appease this child anyway because my life is probably in danger.
Or take a silver bullet.
Yeah.
And end it all.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have another good one here, apparently. FMU, you're on the air.
Hello.
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 Martin, yes, I do have a question.
Okay, is this one of your characters?
Well, that's any time would be good.
Okay, there was a movie you did many years ago, and I can't think of the name of it. It was with Kevin Bacon, and he played
an
up-and-coming writer.
Yes, it's called The Big Picture.
The Big Picture, okay. Right. I couldn't remember the name of it because a friend of mine had it on VHS, and I couldn't remember the name of it.
If only there was some system where we could track down movie titles.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Well, Well, do you have a question about it, or did you just want him to name the movie?
Wanted to name it. You know, Google could have done it. I figured this out too. You know.
No, I just haven't seen it in years prior to that. So I just wonder whether it was on DVD or.
Yeah, I can't.
I think it is on DVD.
I gotta say, I'm gonna call you Mr. Short now. These callers.
Yeah.
They get an F tonight. These callers get an F. Usually, you should see the calls I get. This one wants to say this to me. That one wants to say that. I announce we got a high-powered star on the thing. I don't know.
I think that you've got to. I'm sure he had a point. Yes. It couldn't have been just about the title. But the film is a big picture, directed by Christopher Guest.
Yeah, and that's a great movie too. And that. You also, you know, you're talking about how you play Jiminy Glick as a, you know, a guy with, you know, unearned power.
Yeah.
You've also, like a Nathan Thurm character or the agent in Big Picture. It's like, it seems like you take pleasure in that kind of just guy who's his head's about to explode. Well,
Nathan Thurm was a guy who just, that was kind of inspired by Nixon because, or it could have been Bush, but anyone who just looks in the camera and lies, I find hilarious.
Yeah.
And especially with Nixon, because as he was lying and saying, I don't know where the 18 minutes went, there'd be sweat on the top of his lips. So we knew he was lying, we knew he was lying, but he just stared in the camera and lied and dug in. And then what Nathan Thurm would do is when really cornered, lash out.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that was more Cheney.
Mm-hmm. And that cigarette ash you had going. How did you manage to get that?
Now,
ash?
Well, a little. It just put a little wire in it.
The
ash would stay on it.
Well, that is fantastic because it's just like when you're home watching that, you just feel it. Just like all you can stare at is that growing ash. We have Martin Short on the show. You can go down this Saturday. Oh, look, I'm going to say this. I hope that there's a line of people can't wait to get into the show. Some of these callers, I don't want them in that theater.
No, you're being too hard on your audience. This, by the way, this is your audience.
These are my people. You know what?
They're not phoning up Mike Wallace.
No.
They're phoning you.
These are my people. And this
is your people.
I'm going to go home and stare at a wall tonight.
No, but that's, look, I mean, it's you should be proud of your audience.
Number four, Mike. FMU, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. Hi, Mr. Short. This is Ryan.
How are you?
From Manhattan.
Who is this?
Hi. This is Ryan from Manhattan.
Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I entered the interview midway through, so I apologize if you've addressed this already, but you made the transition from SETV to SNL. I was just wondering if did you find that a big shift, or was there any difference at all in terms of, you know, work ethic or in terms of just working on a sketch?
Well, the whole concept of, you know, SCTV was kind of ideal because you're working in your hometown, which was Toronto for me,
mm-hmm.
and you would write for 6 weeks and then you'd shoot for 6 weeks, and while you were shooting you would edit and then they'd assemble the show. And Saturday Night Live is more of a rush, you know, but it's also more daunting. I mean, you can have a hit show on Saturday, you can feel great, you go to the party, you feel cool. And then by Sunday morning, you'd get congratulatory calls, and you may go to a hip lunch. And then by Sunday night, though, you start to get that thing in your stomach because you don't have any ideas. And then if you were a writer on the show and performer, as I was, you would go into the Monday meeting, and you'd, let's say it's, I don't know, Ringo or something, and you'd fake your way through the meeting. Hi, and you'd fake your way through ideas that you didn't have. And then by Monday night, if you didn't have anything, you felt like the biggest failure in the world. And yet, 48 hours before, you were Mr. Television. So that thing never happened in SCTV. So that process was obviously different. It was like final exams every week. But then the kind of surge of being successful on live television is can't be replaced.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Finally. Someone,
see, you're happy now, Tom.
I'm happier.
Yeah.
So. So, let me see. Is good? Is three good?
No, that's
two. Oh, two. FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Mr. Short. It's Mike Manhattan.
How are
you? How
you
doing?
Beautiful.
Very good. Very good. How are you tonight?
I'm good.
I just wanted to pay a compliment to you in a sort of a weird anecdote. Just I play in a band of a heavier sound, a punk band, if you will. And when we talk up the songs, some of the songs are kind of serious and political. And then for our last song, we don't even bother with basically talk. We just ask the crowd what their favorite line from Clifford is. and believe it or not, it gets like a big response, and I'll just pass the microphone around to, you know, whoever has one, and a lot of people have one, and at the end of the show, nobody will come up to us without mentioning how much they like the movie Clifford.
Well, thank you, man. That's very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Anyway, take care.
Okay.
See, it is growing, this Clifford thing. There needs to be a better DVD of Clifford out there, not one that's just in the full frame. It's like watching the thing on TV. It's just the
you want the whole wide screen. You want like how the West was won.
Exactly. I want to be able to see. Look.
Yeah. Exodus. Right.
Exactly. It's not. I know this is not exactly the Ten Commandments.
No. It really wasn't.
No.
No, there really wasn't. The budget was less.
But that's the awesome part of it. When it's just because there's this kid who's 10, but you're making him say these things that maybe a child of the 40s would have, like calling people pappy, like using pappy, and you seem like a good enough sort, and like these phrases that no kid in the 90s would ever use. So it's the creation is just, there's nothing like that.
Thank you.
And when you went into it, looking at it from that point, were you just making him just this amalgam of all kinds, like every type of bad kid there has ever been?
Yeah, there'd been a movie called The Bad Seed with Patty McCormick, and that was a big inspiration of that because she was so icy cold and would say things like, "Who? I like that. Who?" I remember thinking, that's so strange.
And another thing with the character is just like you get this underbelly of him that you just are figuring out, like he doesn't sleep a lot, like you're just realizing, like a kid, you know, kids sleep like nobody's business, but this kid is up, you know, he's sleeping like 4 hours,
and and mainly a diet of sugar.
Yeah, like yes, it just so it almost the character begs more. You want to know more about him, but you're piecing these little fragments together, and you get to see his home life with his mom who drinks a little bit too much.
And the father who is clearly going to have a stroke soon.
Exactly. And when you do that thing with the mouth at the for the stroke, that is, I've never seen anything funnier than that.
Well, thank you.
Now, here's a question somebody asked. Who in your career... Who is another comedian that you have felt the best kind of back and forth with or rapport with?
Oh, I'd say Catherine O'Hara. I'd say Andrew Martin, all the SCTV people.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Steve Martin. I'd say Christopher Guest is a pretty genius man and very, very funny. Mm-hmm.
Now, is there another? We're going to let Mr. Short go. He's got a busy night. He's tired from flying.
Yes.
Is there a good final call here, Mike? Two. This is for all the marbles now, Mike.
I think Mike's done a great job. And we've got to be open to the barbs and arrows of outrageous something.
That's true. Well, this is what first of all. Now all he's going to do is say, all he's going to say is, Martin Short said I did a good job, I'm doing a good job. You're not allowed to call him Marty. Just, can you please say for me, Marty, that you say, Mike, you're not allowed to call me Marty.
Mike, you are allowed to call me Marty.
Oh.
You see, Oh, I love Mike. Come on.
No, I don't like this. Let's go to line two. FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mr. Short.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm a huge fan. This is Erica from Baltimore, by the way.
I'm more than just Erica. You're Erica.
And I was actually thinking of one of my favorite movies when I was younger, which was Interspace.
Oh, I like that movie.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was a lot of fun to make, but I guess it was like your first sci-fi movie, and I was wondering if you kind of had a sci-fi experience. Like, I don't know if they had Comic-Con back then.
No, or... Steven Spielberg produced that movie, and Meg Ryan, I think, was one of her first movies. And Dennis and Meg kind of fell in love in that movie. It was directed by Joe Dante. It was a really good script, and it was fun. We had fun. All the actors bonded. We shot in San Francisco for a couple of months. That was a good time. I mean, that's the thing. When you make a movie, it doesn't really matter how it turns out, and it certainly doesn't matter if someone likes it. Believe me, for everyone who has said they like Clifford, there are scores of people who say that is maybe the worst film ever. And I once commented mistakenly about a film I'd made, and someone had said, "What's the film you'd made you didn't like?" And I mentioned it, and then this 14-year-old kid came up to me and said, "Dude, you said that film. I love that film. You made me feel bad." And I thought, "Oh God, you can never say that. It's right, because all comedy obviously is subjective. So." What one person loves, another person hates, and no one's wrong and no one's right. So, as an actor in a movie, the one thing that you keep is just having fun doing it, because you have no idea if the director's going to screw it up or if anyone's going to like it or they're going to like it 10 years later. But you can control the experience you have doing it, and if it's fun, and that's why stage is fun, because you're in complete control.
Well, that's great, and I've always been. Been a big fan. Every time I hear My Little Buttercup, I think of Ned from Three Amigos. So,
thanks.
Well, thank you, Erica. See, and that's how we go out with the calls.
Well, you can't, Tom. You can't top that.
No, I can't.
I imparted wisdom. Erica was sexy. It was perfect.
One question from the internet here. Somebody wants to know. They've written 10 times here. They want to know about you did your HBO special. I, Martin Short, Goes Hollywood.
That's right.
Will we ever see that? In any form where it is viewable.
I think you can get that on DVD. I don't scour. I'm not like the character from Sunset Boulevard sitting late at night going through the internet. Damn it! Why can't I find it? But I've been told that you can get that.
Okay.
That was
And now a final question that people have asked all night is what can we look forward to? You have the live show which you do. Pretty regularly throughout the country.
Yes.
Is there anything else up your sleeve?
I am writing this movie that I'm hopefully going to maybe direct next year, called Off Your Meds, and I'm going to tour Australia and Europe with my shows for the next few months, and that's what I'm doing.
Oh, that is fantastic. Well, look, I cannot tell you how much this meant to me for you to call up and spend some time with us here on the show.
Hey, pleasure, Tom. I had a riot, and of course, Andy Breckman, I'll do anything for him.
Well, thank you. I'm going to thank him also for this. And please, everybody should go see If I'd Saved, I Wouldn't Be Here this Saturday night, May 2nd, at the Count Basie Theater in Red Bank. And you can get tickets and information at countbasietheater.org. Even the weirdos who called tonight, I'm going to allow them to buy a ticket.
Hey, I love everyone.
That is.
That's
true.
Me.
Well,
yeah.
Well, thank you again for calling.
All right, Tom. My
have
pleasure.
A great night.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Right, bye. See that, Mike? See what that just was? Guy's a god! And he was on the show. Oh, boy. Has there ever been is that the nicest guy ever? He did say nice things about you. That's the only thing he got wrong. Oh, I don't get that. That just shows he's too nice. Look, if you give him 5 minutes with Mike, he'll be singing a different tune there.
The Best Show is produced in partnership with the Forever Dog Podcast Network. The show is hosted by Tom Sharpling and features John Worster, Michael Lisk, Jason Gore, and Pat Byrne. The show is produced and written by Jason Gore, Pat Byrne, Michael Lisk, Brett Davis, John Worster, and Tom Sharpling. The Best Show is executive produced by Tom Sharpling, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Co-executive produced by Jason Gore and Pat Byrne, segment producer Michael Lisk. The show is engineered and mastered by Andrew Gleason and Wesley Knapp. Graphic design, video editing, and social media by Brett Davis. Website and technical support by Martine Sellis. And the show is recorded at Forever Dog Studios in Los Angeles. Support The Best Show on Patreon over at patreon.com/thebestshow. And follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Best Show for Life. That's Best Show #4 Life. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.